Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Final hour here of late night. I'm hanging out at Target Field. Everybody else is at home. Nah, I shouldn't say that. I got some friends here at Target Field. We got some workers here that are hanging out. I don't know if they're listening to me or not. I think that they are. But nonetheless, final hour here of late night here on News Talk 830 WCCO. 651-989-9226. That is the phone number if you are inclined to call and talk Twins baseball here this segment. We'll get to NBA Finals in the next segment. But it was a fun night at the ballpark. Twins get the victory over Seattle 6-5. And it was a rally. It was one of those, it was a game in which the Twins rallied back a couple of different times. Okay? So early on, after what, the first three innings, were down 3-0. And what happens in this game in the fourth inning? The Twins do what they do best. Couple of home runs, one from Jonathan Scope, another one from Castro, and we're all tied at 3. Then eventually Seattle, they have a couple of more innings where they put another run up on the board in each. And so we find ourselves in a position going into the eighth inning where we need a couple of runs to tie this bad boy up. And forget about it. It was just 3 was the magic number. We got 3 in the fourth. We got 3 in the eighth, in the bottom of the eighth. And then Trevor May, although it looked a little shaky, it wasn't easy. It seemed like it was going to be a little bit dicey there, but he got the job done there, saving the game in the ninth, and the Twins get the victory 6-5. Matt McGill gets the victory for the Minnesota Twins. All right, so let's get to the post-game sound, and let's start with Rocco, who continues to just – he's got the magic touch right now, right? Like every decision he makes seems to be a good one. This was Rocco talking about his starting pitcher tonight, Martin Perez.
I think Martin threw the ball pretty well. I mean, his goal was to, you know, execute over the white and, you know, force these guys to, you know, swing the bats. And I think he did that for the most part. I think, you know, there were a couple of moments, a couple of times, small periods throughout the game where, you know, he would use the cutter and try to get some swings and misses on it, which is understandable because it's a good pitch. But again, he battled it out. It probably wasn't the, you know, the easiest or smoothest outing for him. But again, he doesn't quit out there at any point. He continues to try to execute. He doesn't really give in, which we like. And you know, he got us to a point where we're still in the game and in a competitive game, and we're able to get the win because of that.
And I agree with Rocco's assessment. Because when I looked at the game tonight, I felt like he struggled in a couple of innings, a third in the fifth inning, because he went 5 innings tonight, 6 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts on 95 pitches. Pitch count was high. So, but he battled, though, and that's what Rocco spoke to there in that soundbite. And it was a better effort than the last couple of outings. You can tell that he still is not, you know, he's not pitching to the level that he pitched at weeks ago. But it wasn't a terrible outing, and he battled, and he did compete. And when I was standing next to him in that clubhouse, you could tell that he still has a lot of confidence in himself. So he's not rattled, he's not shaken, and he's not in any way going to throw in the towel. So props to Martin Perez for battling tonight. This is Rocco talking about Jorge Polanco. Just, he has great instincts. He goes 3-for-3 at the plate tonight, and just the guy's all hustle, man.
Well, he's a guy that's easy to trust out on the field, and in general, he makes really good decisions over and over again. He's a good ball player with good instincts, good awareness, a lot of feel for what he's doing. You know, I looked at the guys on the bench after, you know, we made the one out on the bases, and then he didn't let that kind of slow him down in any way. He made, you know, the read that he thought was the good read the next time around, and went out there and took an extra base. And but again, this is a guy that's, he's certainly, you know, beyond earned the trust of the staff, and he just does it. He does a good job and makes good decisions on a regular basis.
Yeah, Polanco had a couple of doubles, and he was pushing for another, okay, and he eventually was tagged out at second. He was really trying to stretch one. And it was funny because he got the hit right, and it looked like it was going to become a gapper. But it didn't get all the way to the gap because the outfielder, he cut it off. And a good, you know, throw to second, and he was out by a mile on that particular play. But the guy is trying to hustle. And when you talk about what got this team back into it tonight, it was grinding it out. It was hustling. And that proved to be the reason why the Twins were on the right side of the scoreboard tonight when it comes to the hustle that they displayed. Rocco also talking about taking second on those hustle doubles.
Truthfully, I mean, a lot of our guys, when they hit a ball in the gap or they hit a ball that's even a potential ball they can take an extra base on, a lot of them do it naturally. You know, we're not going to take any credit for the players doing that. I mean, that's a lot of them. I mean, the encouragement is there. I think that all of their teammates on the bench appreciate it when they see something like that. But it's those guys wanting it, and you have to do that out of the box. I mean, you have to run hard out of the box, and you know, we have several guys that do that. They think double every time they hit a ball in the gap.
Another guy that, although it didn't start early in terms of it looking like it was going to be the way that we all envisioned it, okay, with a couple of hits he gave up when he came in the ninth inning, I had some nerves. Let me just go ahead and say it right now. I had some nerves. Trevor May, you know, I get a little bit nervous when Trevor May is out there. He had a couple of nice outings last week, and you could see the confidence starting to build, and he's getting back into to looking like being a productive member of that bullpen. He gave up back-to-back singles to start the ninth, but he was able to shut the door after that. This is Rocco on May's outing.
He really drove the fastball up in the zone and made some good pitches, and he's got good stuff. So I think when he makes those good quality pitches and executes what he's trying to do, it's tough on the hitters. And, you know, he kind of scattered it a little bit and you know, probably kept the hitters guessing and on their toes. But when it came down to making a good pitch, he kind of stayed on the task, and he made good pitches and he got them. But like I said, the stuff is good. I think it played well against you know, the guys he was out there facing, and he got the job done. I think he gutted it out and did a nice job.
Good job by Trevor May tonight. This is Trevor May on his approach versus Seager.
We were staying there. From what I saw, there were some defensive swings. It's what I felt comfortable doing. I'm just going to go right after him. That has served me well. Pitching with super conviction. I just had conviction in my heater.
And that sums it up. 6-5, Twins win. Back at it tomorrow night at 7:10. That's our first pitch. Jose Barrios on the mound for the Minnesota Twins. All right, talking Twins, let's take a phone call here from Jerry, our good friend Jerry from Roseville. What's going on, Jerry?
How's it going, Mr. Lake?
It's going good, man. I'm looking at a nice view of a Target Field. I'm sitting here in the press box in my my little suite, and life is good. Yeah, life is good.
Oh, no doubt. Quick recap from the weekend. 4 days of excellent senior softball, only one minor injury.
Uh-oh.
It was a real treat. Nope.
Also, was it very productive in terms of wins?
We had 38 teams from all around the upper Midwest.
Oh, okay. It was a nice big tournament.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Okay. All right. You said only one injury, right?
Correct.
Okay, good. Hey, what did you think of the ball game tonight?
I was very happy with the comeback. I'm certainly in the boat of, if we can work it out, get one more starter. I mean, it's going to be something to see how Perez and Gibson and maybe Pineda go through here the next...
Yep, the next month.
So, right. And, I mean, I would think that's the big need, and there's options out there, and just I'll get your opinion here, Lake. I'd like to make a move somewhere, maybe late June, early July, to where it helps you before the deadline, because there's always the rush at the deadline. And I would think if you can on somebody, whether it's a Bumgardner or somebody else, try and do it earlier, and maybe also you get them at a less expensive price. I suppose that's the best way to put it.
It's going to be – and thanks to the phone call from Jerry in Rosewood, it's all going to be predicated, though, on the market. And the market doesn't always go the way that you expect it to go, right? So you have to evaluate it. And sometimes teams will not part with guys, even though they know deep down that they might not be able to re-sign a guy or keep a guy and extend a guy long term. I saw it firsthand with Eric Hosmer in Kansas City. The Royals knew that they were not going to be able to keep everybody, whether it's Lorenzo Cain, Eric Hosmer, whoever. And you know what? They didn't end up trading those guys before the deadline. Right? It's like some people say, well, hold on. You're not going to get anything for that player? Well, they didn't like what they were being offered. Teams were trying to get over, it sounded like, according to maybe, you know, Dayton Moore and the crew there. They weren't getting what they felt like was a good deal or value. And so essentially at that point in time, you know, instead of taking whatever somebody's tossing, you say, you know what, we're going to end up with a draft pick. We'll end up with that draft pick because that player is going to go on and sign somewhere else. But it'll be interesting to see how the market is. And that's why you don't rush right now to try to make a deal and end up getting, you know, making a bad deal, when maybe the market changes here over the course of the next 3 to 4 weeks. We'll see how all of that stuff plays out. All right, the phone number to the show is 651-989-9226. But coming up next, want to get to, well, the Oscar that should have been given out last night when it comes to NBA basketball, because I think there was some acting going on. I'll explain coming up next here on Late Night. All right, back with you here on Late Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. Let's talk some NBA basketball, shall we? And let's talk about the... I know I shouldn't be judging people, okay? And I don't know at the end of the day how fake it was or how real it was. It came across as fake to me. So everybody by now knows what occurred last night, right? The Toronto Raptors, they had an opportunity to win an NBA championship, and they didn't pull it off, okay? They didn't get the job done. They did not finish off the Golden State Warriors. What did the Golden State Warriors do? Well, what did Rudy T say many years ago with the with the Houston Rockets? Never underestimate a champion, right? The heart of a champion. Well, they showed their heart last night. Golden State Warriors didn't back down. With a couple minutes left in the game, they were trailing by six, and Kawhi Leonard was taking over and just, man, doing his thing. And it looked like the Warriors were done. I even said as much. Now, you guys didn't hear me say it. I might have said it on air. I think I said it into the microphone, and DJ was in the room with me. And remember, I think I said last time, I said, man, it's over. It's a wrap. I think I pronounced the Warriors as dead, and they're not dead yet. They're trailing in the series 3-2, but they battled back and won that game. And earlier in the game, in the first half, you saw Kevin Durant, who has been out for a month, okay, with I'm going to do the air quotes right now, calf strain. In which, look, he hadn't been able to play. They're trailing 3-1, and so he gives it a go last night, which was not a good decision. Because in the midst of coming out and being 3-of-3 from the field and showing how he's an elite basketball player and one of the best players in the world, in the second quarter, early on, he goes down and... torn Achilles. So now that Kevin Durant has a torn Achilles, everybody wants to act sad. Everybody wants to be concerned for his best interest, right? That's a load of crap. Folks were questioning his toughness, talking about how he's already set to bolt for free agency. And none of us, media included, shouldn't have been doing that, okay? The guy is a two-time NBA Finals MVP. So now all of a sudden he doesn't want to compete? That's absurd. And the thing that gets me, okay, the thing that gets me is the reaction last night of Warriors GM Bob Myers. He was crying at the podium after the game about Kevin and his injury. This is Bob Myers post-game talking about Kevin Durant getting injured.
He was cleared to play tonight. That was a collaborative decision. I don't believe there's anybody to blame, but I understand this world. And if you have to, you can blame me. I run our basketball operations department. And let me tell you something about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant loves to play basketball, and the people that questioned whether he wanted to get back to this team were wrong.
Okay. Just stop it, Bob Myers. Seriously. Just stop it. Look, I'm not going to sit here and make it seem as though he doesn't care about Kevin Durant at all, but he didn't care about KD that much, because he authorized him to play with a significant injury. That's the reality of it. Sometimes you have to save athletes from themselves. And this is how we know this to be true. Because does anybody out there actually think that he cared that much? Because the reason why Kevin Durant played last night was because they were on the verge of elimination. That's why. He wouldn't have played if the series was tied. He wouldn't have played if they were up in the series. He played because the GM and everybody with the organization thought that Kevin Durant could save their ass. That's the reality of it. I don't want to hear nothing else. You might think that I'm wrong, or you might disagree with my opinion. That's fine. If you have a take, 651-989-9226. But that's what I think. He hadn't played at all. Over, and he magically, after they got down 3-1, he magically, you know what? He's feeling better. Sure, he's feeling better. Sure, when you're on the brink of elimination, he's feeling better. Shocker. Come on, man. Save it. Save it. He wasn't healthy. Yeah. By the way, was this malpractice by the Warriors? Was it? Because even afterwards, there was a report by Rachel Nichols, who I'm a big fan of on ESPN. She did a report on camera talking about what Steve Kerr and the Warriors people had told her. This was what she reported last night. Listen to this.
Out of the building was Steve Kerr and Scott. I mean, he just kept saying to me, he's like, the doctors told us that he couldn't get more hurt by coming back, that he had cleared that hurdle. And he just kind of kept saying that over and over again. And I think that's the pain you see on someone like his face, Bob Myers' face. They feel responsible for this situation.
The doctors told him it couldn't get worse? Huh? Come on now. Come on, people. I know y'all out there listen. Doesn't that sound just fishy? Doesn't that sound fishy? Think about it for a second. It couldn't have got any worse. Wink, wink. Really? It couldn't have got worse? That makes no sense. He had a calf strain, and then he ends up tearing an Achilles? It couldn't have got worse? These NFL players, these Major League Baseball players, these NBA players, they're getting the best medical assistance out there. They are. They are. And I'm not saying that doctors can't make mistakes. Okay, that's not what I'm saying. But they don't make too many mistakes. Not at this level, they don't. These guys are phenomenal at their job. They really are. They really are. It's all fishy to me, man. I don't know. Maybe I'm dead wrong. Let me ask. You know what? Let me ask DJ. Okay, DJ's back at the station. Did you always feel like there was something fishy about this whole entire ordeal? Because I, from day one, remember when he got injured in the Houston Rockets series and he looked around like somebody kicked him in the calf, like his Achilles had popped. Didn't you always feel like something wasn't right with this?
You know, I did not pick up on that right away when the initial calf injury, but then you started to hear a few rumors, and then obviously last night it blows up, and all of a sudden you go, oh, well, I guess there was more going on underneath the surface than we knew about. And, whatever the story is, it's clear that there was, there's more to the story than what was being told. But
I don't think we're ever going to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, maybe not. Here's what I think, though. I mean, I agree with most of your take, and that, there's more going on and someone's not telling the truth. But I also see the side of it that, look, this is the NBA Finals. These teams, these players have prepared, for years and for decades for this time, for winning the ultimate prize in an NBA title. And to that extent, I think it's the time that you're willing to take a little more risk. So even if they knew that there was a chance of some more injury, if this is what your career is culminating in, maybe this is the time when you're able to assume some more risk when the reward is so high.
No. I'm gonna tell you why. That doesn't hold anything. It doesn't hold any water. Doesn't hold anything. Any Kool-Aid. I'm gonna tell you why. You know why? Because this wasn't a game seven. You knew damn well, as injured as he was, Kevin Durant couldn't play on one leg for three consecutive games. If it was a game seven, I could maybe buy that. But no, we're talking about in game five. No, he's not playing three complete games. After being out for a month and being injured and not being 110%, or being 100%.
Yeah, but if you're the Warriors and your backs are against the wall, you're playing on the road in an elimination game and the writing's on the wall.
So sacrifice that guy's career for this one game.
No. You balance the risk and the reward, and you say, we are willing, with Kevin Durant in on the conversation, to take on some additional risk that we would not take in the regular season, we wouldn't take in the first round of the playoffs, and we're willing to take that risk because we think that Kevin Durant, who's one of the top players in the world, could be the catalyst we need to get over the hump in this game and return home and have a chance at winning an NBA title, which is what all of us are here to do.
So you think that him playing last night was the right decision? Because I think it absolutely was 100% the wrong decision.
I think it's easy to say in hindsight that it was a wrong decision, but I have
I said it at the time.
I have no problem with the decision.
I said it at the time. I even said it earlier yesterday with Corey Hepola. I didn't think he was going to play at all. I didn't think and I was shocked that he was cleared to play. I didn't think it was the right move then, and I still don't think it was the right move.
I have no problem with that move. And if I'm in that situation, I go, even if there's some risk, now's the time. Now's the time to go.
I got you. All right, coming up next, today's top headlines that comes your way in 60 seconds, and the new list of the world's highest paid athletes. Ooh, this is interesting. There's one sport that stands out. We get to that next. About who's getting paid out here in the world of sports. Welcome back to Late Night here on News Talk 830 WCCO. I saw this list earlier of Forbes' richest athletes for the year 2019. Okay. And my goodness, man. Soccer players just absolutely crush. They dominate. They really do. So if you got young kids out there and you're not sure, well, do I want to steer them towards, you know, baseball. Don't want to steer them towards football, basketball. Hey, golf. Soccer's not a bad sport. Okay? Soccer's not a bad sport. Now, when it comes to who topped making the most money, Messi, he topped the Forbes list of world's highest paid athletes. This is astonishing. Messi made $127 million this year, and that's both salary and endorsements. $127 million this past year, salary and endorsements. That's $18 million more than the guy that was in second place, Cristiano Ronaldo, another soccer player. I'm just laughing at these numbers, and I'm not even spelling the names out correctly. $18 million more? Oh, my gosh. My goodness. How about that? He makes $109 million, right? Abs of steel. All the ladies love him. He's got $109 million. Life is good for him. Well, he does have some negative stuff going on. He's been investigated for a couple of different issues. Anyway, Neymar, he was third highest on the list. He came in at $105 million this past year. That just, the top three soccer players, that's off the charts. Now, Canelo Alvarez, the boxer, he totaled $94 million, okay? And I think the amazing thing about his $94 million is just $2 million of that came through endorsements. That's awesome. I mean, he's getting it done, and he doesn't even have that many endorsements, okay? $2 million came through in endorsements, which means that just money based on actual, like, without the endorsement stuff, him and Messi have made the same amount of money if you just take the endorsements out of it. Messi's got a bunch of endorsements, so he's good. But Canelo Alvarez made $94 million, 92 of that, without the endorsements. Roger Federer, he came in fifth. The tennis star, $93.4 million. He actually was number one when it comes to just endorsements, okay? So when it comes to endorsements, he raked in a ton. But Roger Federer, just think about that. He's had so much success throughout the years, and he's still cashing massive checks. Now, I didn't even really realize this until I saw this story, but there were a couple of NFLers that landed in the top 10. And, well, if I was to ask you before seeing this article, DJ, that there were two NFL players that would land in the top 10, and I asked you to guess who they were, who would you guess before seeing this article?
Well, I would guess that they would be the top handful of established quarterbacks in the NFL. So players like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, maybe Russell Wilson, players like that.
Okay, all right. And sure enough, Russell Wilson, $89.5 million, and Aaron Rodgers, they were sixth and seventh in this on this list. Rodgers with $89.3 million. So they were getting, I mean, mad money. And then the final three to round out the top 10, the final three, LeBron James at $89 million, Steph Curry at $79.8 million, and Kevin Durant, torn Achilles and all, with $65.4 million. Oh, my goodness. I'm not jealous. I'm not at all. Because I'm going to win Mega Millions at some point. Or Powerball, either one. I'll be just fine. These guys worked hard, man. They busted their butts. They've made the most out of their athletic gifts and God-given talent. So props to them for ranking in the top 10 of highest paid athletes in the world for 2019, according to Forbes magazine. All right, coming up next, final segment of the show, we get to Word on the Street. We get to that next year on Late Night. All right, final segment. Shout out to David Josephson here on Late Night, because I like this music. This is kind of badass for Word on the Street. It's basically our gossip segment where we take a glance at some stuff in the world of entertainment with celebs and even at times some athletes. And we just kind of go through and look at some nuggets and speculate and talk about them.
Well, shout out to you, Lake. I mean, sure, I came up with this music, but, you know, I'm not real big on the celebrity news a lot of times. So sometimes my wife makes fun of me because I don't know who's with who or whatever. So I feel like you give me an education on Word on the Street of kind of what's going on in the entertainment world.
Oh, we just tag team it, man. It's a combo thing, right? That's how we do.
All right. Well, first off today, actress and model Robin Givens opened up in a recent interview about a past fling with Howard Stern, radio host Howard Stern, and answered some questions about a supposed hookup she had with Brad Pitt. So the Brad Pitt deal, apparently they were seen together in a car and there was some speculation that they had a thing going on. She denied that. However, Robin Givens did comment on her fling, as you could say, with radio host Howard Stern. They tried to press her for some more intimate details, but all she would say is that Stern was a magnificent lover.
All right, so a couple things. She shot down the whole claim in regards to the Brad Pitt thing. And I guess at the time, this whole Brad Pitt stuff, I think she was still married to Mike Tyson, I think, at the time.
Yes.
So she wasn't going there, and she's like, no.
Her divorce with Tyson sounds like was in progress already at the time.
Yeah, but I mean, my goodness, I mean, ain't nobody still made it. Oh, no, you ain't running the risk with Iron Mike. Iron Mike lose it. Oh, no, we leaving that alone. So she was like, nah, we're good. She knew better than to you know, go down that road with Brad Pitt. But in regards to the Howard Stern stuff, I mean, she said he was what was the quote? Somebody, he was a phenomenal lover or something like that, or whatever?
A magnificent lover. Adding that he was simply, quote, unbelievable.
Oh, Howard Stern getting props out here. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Robin, she's speaking on it. Man, Howard Stern, all the ladies loving Howard Stern right now, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's how it's going down. I mean, I know he's already spoken for, but I mean, imagine this. Imagine Howard Stern's day today when he heard those quotes and those were like just in the airwaves and he's like, yeah, I always had it. I told all of y'all I always had it. Man.
All right. Well, Miley Cyrus and Liam Hemsworth, who have been rumored to have some issues in their relationship, they're celebrating their 10th anniversary. And sort of to give a sideways comment to the folks that are speculating about the demise of their relationship, there was a post on Facebook that said, "Happy 10th anniversary." This is from Miley Cyrus. "Good to see that everyone is as dumb as they were in 2019. And they had a link to one of the articles that was speculating about the demise of their relationship. So at least according to social media, their relationship is 10 years old and going strong.
Okay, so let me just be the first to say this. All right, I'm going to go ahead and break the news here on Late Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. They're done. They're done out here. They are done out here. And I'm going to tell you why they're done. First off, they got married this past December. So they haven't even been married for a year. But they're going with the, we've known each other for 10 years. Oh, we've been dating for 10 years. Who all does that? Now I get, typically you'll get that if a person's been married for quite some time, right? Like you'll acknowledge and say, you know what, we've been married for 5, but we've been together for 10, right? You oftentimes get that. But seriously, they haven't even been married a year, and we're talking about our 10, and she posts this after the rumblings, right? Where there's smoke, there's fire, right? No, they're done out here. Liam's going to have a new girlfriend 3 years from now, and Miley's going to have a new guy in the next year and a half, 2 years. I'm sorry.
It just
because now they're trying. No. Now they're trying. Now she's putting it out there to try to you know kill the noise. Nah, I'm not buying it. What's there's trouble in paradise.
It just smells like a high school relationship where you know like the kids are on social media, whatever they use, and saying, "Oh, happy 6 week anniversary of us dating. Happy two yes. months of us dating," and they're making a big scene yes. out of that. And they're yes. like, they're like 14 years old.
Liam, I'm mad at you. Now I gotta go to Snapface and put something out there.
Snapface, we do sound old.
I gotta get to Instabook. Oh, my goodness.
Speaking of sounding old, can you believe that it has been 15 years since this movie came out?
Girls only want boyfriends who have great skills. You know, like nunchuck skills, bow hunting skills, computer hacking skills.
Now it's cool. Napoleon Dynamite, the cult classic Napoleon Dynamite, turns 15 today.
Okay, Napoleon Dynamite. 15-year-old today movie, right? Let me just go ahead and say it for all the people in the back. Unpopular opinion. Napoleon Dynamite's trash. That
Come
movie
on.
Was terrible. What? Movie was terrible. Napoleon Dynamite was not funny at all. I didn't even watch the whole movie. I had to stop watching the movie. I remember my co-host at the time, Corey Cove, he's ranting and raving, Napoleon Dynamite, you know, best movie ever and all. But that's how he is with every movie. It's the greatest movie ever, right? Man, I sat there and I tried, man. I tried. I gave it a chance. Man, I had to turn it off. That was trash. And it's funny because you go to Vail, Colorado, right, hanging out there doing radio in Vail, and the guy that played, I'm trying to think of the character. Was it Pedro?
Yeah, vote for Pedro.
Yes, vote for Pedro. He was actually DJing in a club in Vail Village.
Pedro or as the actor?
As the actor slash Pedro. Like that was, I mean, it was a popular movie at the time, and so everybody's like, you know, Pedro's the man right now, and so he's like, I guess he was doing like a DJ thing at the time, but he was clearly, you know, the marquee was Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite is DJing in the Vail Village. Man, I almost like, man, you know what, he might throw a dope party, but the movie's trash. Napoleon Dynamite was terrible. And don't you tell me it was funny. It wasn't funny, Dave.
Efron Ramirez is the actor we're trying to think of, but here's the deal. Napoleon Dynamite, and I've heard this from multiple people and it rang true for me, it's a movie that gets better the more you watch it. So I was with, when I first saw it, I go, I don't know if I'm into that. But then as I saw it a second or third, I don't know, I maybe seen it three or
four
times.
You're not fooling me.
I love it. It's fantastic. It's a cult, classic. Hilarious.
You're telling me that it was terrible the first time you watched it and you had to watch it three times for you to love it? Oh, you got to be kidding.
I'm telling you, it's a movie that grows on you. Try it. Watch it again. Watch it again. Give it a chance.
It was so terrible the first time around. I don't know if I could sit through it again.
I bet I can throw that football over that mountain.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, I love the sound by Juicy Grab, though. That was awesome. That clip from Napoleon Dynamite, that was awesome. All right, man. Does that wrap it up? I think that wraps it up.
Yeah, that's it.
That wraps it up for Word on the Street. And that's going to wrap up the show here on Late Night. Hey, thanks for listening. We're back at it tomorrow after the game. We got Final Pitch and then another Late Night right here on News Talk 830 WCCO.